from the Brew City. This is the Brewer Nation Podcast. Here are your hosts, Adam, Big, Rig, and Kerry Kostka.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is the Brewer Nation Podcast. As you heard in the open, I am Adam, the Big Rig, alongside Kerry Kostka. We are going old school today. We have had the use of some fantastic recording equipment, courtesy of one of my other gigs. I do a weekly radio show. So we've been using some of the recording equipment to do this little spiel over the last couple of times, but didn't have the chance today, Kerry or myself, to drive all the way into the studio. So we're going old school with our digital recorder, and hopefully it sounds not too terrible for you guys today. Why are we recording today? Well, it is February 18th. It's Saturday. And while that might not mean anything in a normal year, I mean, what's February 18th to anybody? I mean, happy birthday if it's your birthday or, you know, whatever. But in 2012, it's Pitchers and Catchers Report Day. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus. Or whatever, you know, deity you may subscribe to. But baseball's back. Brewer baseball, more importantly. The Mariners reported sometime last week because, let's be honest, they need the help. They need the extra time. But the Brewers, who played deep into October, reported today. The pitchers and catchers are there. They're getting stuff in their lockers. They're doing some side work. Their physicals are all tomorrow, and the first organized team, full pitchers and catchers, battery mates, the whole thing, that all starts on Monday, February 20th. Reports will be coming out daily from Maryvale in Phoenix, Arizona. We will be keeping you updated every step of the way on the Facebook page. That's Facebook.com/BrewerNation. The Twitter account, Twitter.com/BrewerNation, or just follow at BrewerNation if you've got your own Twitter account. But those are the best spots to keep abreast of everything that's going on. Updates will be fast and furious. So, yeah, follow the Brewers, and welcome back to baseball. And welcome back to Kerry. How you doing, Kerry?
I'm doing great. Today should be a national holiday, or at least a Wisconsin holiday.
I completely agree. I probably why they have it on a Saturday, I would think. But personally, I have my own little ritual that I do for Pitchers and Catchers Report Day. And I've done it for the last, it's got to be pushing 10 years. I'll have to think back to exactly when we started doing this. But up until last year, a buddy of mine, his name was Hans, we watched Major League every single Pitchers and Catchers Report Day. Like I said, going back a number of years. He passed away last year during that blizzard that we had. So not to be a downer, but didn't have a chance to watch it with him last year. Still watched it on my own. And I got another buddy coming over to watch it this year at my place this evening. So we're probably right around the time this podcast gets posted and you can listen to it. I will be starting Major League because there's nothing better than hearing Bob Uecker talking about players reporting to spring training. That's why I do it, because it's got the Uke. It's a fantastic movie anyway. But hearing Bob Uecker's voice talking about baseball never gets old. Kerry, you do anything specifically on this day? And I don't blame you if you don't, of course, but...
No, but it's just a reminder that I need to start researching for the upcoming fantasy baseball draft season.
Big time. Big time. I've got a big draft coming up at the end of March. It's the league that I care the most about because it's with Fraternity Brothers, and bragging rights are... I mean, I won the thing for 4 years in a row, and then everybody complained, so we switched up the keeper rules, and we switched up the fact that it was rotisserie. We went from that to head-to-head. So then all this stuff got screwed up, and I came in third last year. Still, dynamite. But instead of keeping five players, we only kept two. And then if you kept them going into the previous year, you couldn't keep them going into last year. All this stuff to basically get me to empty out my roster of people that I was able to acquire over the years in this keeper draft system. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
No grudge, right?
No, not at all. No, actually, the guy that won played a good game and hasn't rubbed it into me too much, so I don't begrudge him that. Unfortunately, we have a Cardinals fan in the league, so he's been unbearable. Actually, I'm the commissioner of the league, so I changed his team name to, despite winning the World Series, the Cardinals suck. He hasn't seen it yet, but that'll be funny when he actually logs in. But there's a lot to get updated to you guys. Last time we came to you on the podcast was December 20th of all the way in last year. So it's been almost a full 2 months. First workout on February 20th will be the full 2 months since we've come to you last. And a lot has happened since then. A lot of that happened before that. We did that podcast then because it was after the winter meetings. We learned about the new guys coming in like Aramis Ramirez, Alex Gonzalez, things like that. The fact that LaTroy Hawkins and Takashi Saito are not going to be here anymore, as they signed elsewhere as free agents. But there are some people that left our team, too, since then, officially, as they signed other places. And then a whole bunch of other people that we kind of brought in, both free agent contracts, minor league deals, and then we're going to get into the non-roster invitees to spring camp. Those guys that are in big league spring training that are not on the 40-man roster, those are your non-roster invitees. We'll talk about the 40-man roster guys, too, who is going to be, you know, throwing and catching and hitting coming up in the next couple of weeks in the main camp part of Maryvale. And then we'll get into a 25-man roster projection that Carrie and I each have worked up. We have not seen each other's lists, but there's usually at least a couple of differences. And yeah, we'll go through all that stuff. So before we get to any of it, though, we should probably get this out of the way. It's February 18th. And we still have no idea what's going to happen with Ryan Braun. Of course, last time we mentioned it, only in the fact that we weren't going to talk about it, and we won't again. The projections as to the rumors why and the hows and the whats, you know, there's no real reason to go over them. But Braun may be suspended to start the season. That suspension has a chance to be 50 games. And we'll find out. They'll have to let us know before opening day. I mean,
I would imagine we'd have to know within the next couple of weeks, really.
You would think. I did catch a little bit of a breeze over the last couple of days that they're going to shoot to have a Braun resolution publicized and made official no later than Thursday of next week. Now, that might seem like it's some sort of insider information, but at the same point, Brewers hitters report next week Friday. So that could just simply be, let's try to hit this deadline so that if Braun comes to camp on time, as opposed to early, that he knows what's going on. And again, Braun may already know, right?
He may already know.
And he's keeping it from the media because they effed him, so now he doesn't have to report the news, right? No. I don't think it's actually the case.
No, and I'm hoping this means it's good news, but as Adam mentioned, it's really can't go into it because a lot of the stuff that came out in the initial report has been actually already been proven false.
Yeah.
So we just got to play the wait and see game. One thing to note is that if Braun does happen to lose his case and is out for a period of time, whether it be 25, 50, whatever, he can still fully participate through the end of spring training within the team. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him play in a lot of games, putting in a lot of innings. Normally the starters only go two or three innings. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the lineup for the full nine innings towards the end of the year just to get him that live action.
Yeah, at the same time, though, you're going to have whoever the fifth outfielder would be
right,
getting some extra time, too, so he gets his at-bats. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't remember who I'm talking about here, but I thought I remembered, maybe it was Manny Ramirez when he had his 50-game suspension, his first suspension that he had, you know, a couple years ago. Wasn't he allowed towards the end of the suspension time to go to the minor league side and ramp back up and like kind of like have a rehab stint?
Yeah, they gave him, I think, I can't remember if it was 5 or 10 days.
So, but I mean, he had a little bit of time.
It was a little bit of a ramp up period.
Okay, yeah, and that makes sense. I assume they do it the same way with Braun if, again, that happens to be the case. Only because you're suspended for 50, you shouldn't have to be suspended for 50 and suck for 15 while you're getting your swing back. So it's only fair to allow him to come back as ready as he can once any suspension ends. So, now, I did see, and Kerry, I forgot to mention this to you just before we started to record, but somebody put a link out on my Facebook wall for the Brewer Nation Facebook page that it was a link over to the joint drug agreement. And I don't know if it was anything that's updated with the new one. I assume it was just the old one. But what it showed, if I can find it here, I'll get you the exact wording of it. But what it showed was that, there it is, if what Braun had in the system is a banned substance, it's not a 50-game suspension that he's facing. Now, performance-enhancing drug is a 50-game suspension, but the, there's a discipline section, but the prohibited substance suspension, first offense, is maximum of a 30-day fine, or a 30-day suspension. So we will have to see if he is actually, if he loses his appeal, we will actually, it'll be unique to figure out what he's being suspended for.
Right.
That might tell us how long of a suspension he's up against. Although I believe that they qualify raised levels of testosterone as performance-enhancing, even if it's not a performance-enhancing drug he took. I don't know, it's confusing. But that's why we're not talking about it, even though we spent 5 minutes on it, right? Leave it to us, to ramble on about something I said I wouldn't talk about.
Well, 30 days would be a lot better. It'd be kind of like waiting for Prince Fielder to start hitting again. It takes usually a month or so to get cranked up anyway.
Yeah, he is actually pretty terrible about early season type stuff. There's no doubt about that. That's another thing, though, about Aramis Ramirez. Hopefully, playing in the controlled environment in Miller Park will help him shake off his early season rust, because he does not play well at the beginning of the year. We need him to definitely step up, especially if a certain player loses an appeal.
That's true, but the Brewers have put together a pretty decent support team this year. There seem to be a lot of guys who are geared more towards playing the small ball. We have this has got to be the most speed I've seen on a Brewer team in quite some time.
Yeah, they've got a lot of guys that should be, that they're capable of running, whether or not they actually do, we'll have to see. But adding Aoki, too, I mean, that's just another guy that has got that speed.
Yep. A lot of decent hitters. They improved the defense a lot. So, I mean, we would miss him, but given the strength of our starting pitching, the improvements we've made on the roster from top to bottom, I can see the Brewers being right in the thick of it when he comes back, and it'll be just like in 2007 was when he was called up?
Yeah.
It'd be like that when he came up and just started raking in June, you know?
Yeah, it was right at the end of May that he came up in the first place from the minors. You're absolutely right. But talking about all that stuff, all you know, the pitching and all that is in place, the improved defense, because all that's very, very important this season, because our offense is going to take a hit, even if Braun is there from day one. Because, yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you know it by now. If you're listening to our podcast, you're a big enough Brewers fan to have read this information. But Prince Fielder, officially gone. It was a sad day for some, an eventuality finally realized for most. But Prince Fielder signed with the Detroit Tigers. Congratulations to him. He, quote-unquote, went home, if you will. All of the old footage of him hitting home runs at Tiger Stadium back in the 80s or whenever that was. Good for him. Happy for him. Gets a chance to play and earn a ton of money. But, you know.
Yeah, I'm
not mad about it.
It's
disappointing that the Brewers couldn't afford to pay that, but at the same time, there's no way in hell that that team and our payroll and this media market size, and there's no way we could afford to pay a contract like that for that long.
No, we'd end up with those two and five and a bullpen filled of guys from the minors.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
exactly.
You got to pick where you spend your dollars.
Couldn't even afford washed-up veterans at that point that are playing for a near-league minimum. It's going to be all 0 to 3 year guys.
Yeah.
Oh, you're hitting arbitration? Hey, get out of here. Play the old Florida Marlins technique. Hopefully now that they're Miami, they'll play a little bit better, but that's the way they did it. But no, honestly, sincere congratulations to Fielder. Glad that he got his money. Glad that he got his payday. more glad the fact that the Brewers don't play the Tigers this year in interleague play. That's better than any of that. So.
Oh, we'll have to face them. You wouldn't for 3 years.
Well, we faced the AL Central this year.
Yeah, and then the West the year after. So we got a good couple of years.
Yep, unless unless we face them in the World Series, it should be a Prince Fielderless free Miller Park for a while. And even then, in 3 years, if we play the Tigers, it could be in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So Fielder might not be back in Miller Park for a long time.
Well, I saw an interesting stat on Fielder's home runs that they took all the home runs he hit at Miller Park and placed them over the field dimensions at Comerica, and his home run went down like 20-some percent.
Yeah, I think it was like 7 home runs that wouldn't have been home runs.
Yeah.
And it's all the opposite field stuff
that
went out at Miller Park that wouldn't have gone out at Comerica. So, you know, you take the good with the bad. You got paid, but in order to continue to produce, you're going to have to work extra hard. So, but Fielder's the kind of guy that'll do it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, talking about losing offense, the biggest loss to the offense of the Milwaukee Brewers from last year to this year, Craig Counsell. I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big stick you're taking out of the lineup. I mean, he had that long streak of games where he didn't hit. Wait a minute. He didn't hit at all. Yeah, I'm being facetious, people. Craig Counsell, fantastic in the field, fantastic as a person and as a human being, great in the clubhouse, good leader, awful hitter at this point in his career. So, yes, he retired, officially took a job in the Brewers front office as special assistant to the general manager. So he's going to be helping out Doug Melvin, learning the ropes that way. A lot of people thought maybe he'd go right into coaching and maybe eventually be a manager. But he said that when he was a kid growing up, he fell in love with the front office side of the game. So maybe that's his future. I mean, Doug Melvin's a former minor league player. You don't hear about that much, but he is. A lot of guys that are in front offices were players in the game.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the path Counsell wants to take for now. He was offered to be the first base coach in Chicago with Dale Swaim?
Yeah.
And he didn't feel the timing was right because, A, it was early in the offseason. He thought he might still have a chance to play. But then he didn't feel going from Milwaukee to Chicago quite that quickly was really the right time for it. So, glad to still have him. Hometown boy, Whitefish Bay. And he's still with the team. So.
And he came up with a lot of clutch hits during his time in a Brewery uniform and throughout his career. I mean,
definitely. A big part of 2 World Series champions for that ability to come through in the clutch. But yeah, Fielder is gone, Counsell is gone, those other guys are gone. So what they are removed from is the 40-man roster when they leave town. For those of you that don't understand how the rostering works, the quick overview of it, if you are a player in a system and you've had 6 years professional or more, in order to not be subjected to what's called the Rule 5 draft, which I won't get into, you need to be on the 40-man roster of a team to be protected from it. If you're on the 40-man roster, you can be sent up and down to the big league roster, the 25-man roster. If you are on the 25-man and you have to go down to the 40-man, you can use a minor league option to get yourself there. But you only have 3 of those. Now, that's not each time you get sent down, that's an entire season. So if you have one guy coming up and down in the middle of a season, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, it only counts as 1 minor league option. So basically, you have those first years as a minor leaguer, then you get protected on the 40-man roster, and then you start using your option years once you're on the 40-man if you're not up in the major league system. So that's the quick and dirty view of it. So with spring training, everybody on the 40-man roster is in big league camp, because there's, of course, all the minor leaguers have to get ready, too. So they've got their own facilities and their own fields, and they do their own training and their own work with their coaches and whatnot. Occasionally, you'll see a minor league guy get into a major league game. They're the ones that wear the jerseys in the 90s with no name on the back, just because they needed an extra body for that day, and so they exposed a minor league guy to a game. They're allowed to do it that way. But for the purposes of keeping everybody organized, making sure the coaches aren't overwhelmed with too many players, they've got it split that way, so for the 40-man roster and otherwise. Now, there's a few extra guys that come into big league camp, mostly to get the experience of being there, seeing how they stack up against other teams, big league hitters, and those are called non-roster invitees. The Brewers this year invited, I don't have it up anymore, I want to say it was like total of 15 players as non-roster invitees. Is that right?
14.
14. So, Kara, if you want to spin through those by position, give a mini blurb about who they are and why they're there.
Sure. Brewers invited 6 pitchers, 4 catchers, and 4 infielders. Surprisingly, I was actually sort of surprised to not see any outfielders invited to camp, given the kind of up in the air about Braun, but that may say something about depth there.
Well, they do have, they added Caleb Gindel to the 40-man in the offseason, say, 6 or 7 outfielders on the 40-man?
Yep.
I'm sorry, 8. They've got 8 outfielders on the 40-man now.
Some of the most notable additions to the non-roster invitees were Mike Rivera being invited back, Brooks Conrad, Travis Ishikawa.
Yep, first baseman extraordinaire.
And Cesar Estares were kind of some of the most notable ones that were invited to camp. Jed Bradley.
Yeah, Bradley and Youngman were both. And those guys are definitely, they're our first-round picks from last year, if mm-hmm. you guys remember those names. Youngman and Bradley were both invited, no doubt, just simply to get that experience.
Yeah.
Of what it's like to be in big league camp, because they are both older college arms that should, if they continue on the career path that they're, that they've done in the minors or in the college ranks, they should progress through the system pretty quickly and might be up in Milwaukee in a year or two. So why not, give them the chance to experience that a little bit this year?
Definitely.
Brooks Conrad, minor league free agent signee. He has a chance to win a backup infield job. He officially can play first, second, and third, like Taylor Green can. But the problem with Brooks Conrad is that he doesn't really play defense well at all. So first base he's okay at, but second and third, he's not very good at all at those positions. But he's a switch hitter and can hit a little bit. That's really why he would make the team, I'm sure, is because of that offensive ability.
Yeah, he'd be a stick off the bench.
Yeah. But he's somebody definitely to keep an eye on, and as well as Cesar Estures, because somebody has to back up shortstop. Alex Gonzalez is not playing 150 games like Yuni Betancourt did last year. Not that we would want Yuni Betancourt to play here anymore at all. But Alex Gonzalez, who, of course, is a much better player, much better defender at least, he's older. If you can play 150, great. But even still, you need somebody to back up for 12 games to play shortstop. So Taylor Green can't do it. Obviously, the starters around the infield sure as heck can't do it. You've got 3 real options and somebody that can back up short. It's Estures. It's Eric Ferris, if he gets enough work during the spring and can feel comfortable, because he got a little bit of work there last year. As you heard on the interview that we played last podcast, he's going to be getting more time this season coming up, in spring especially, to see what he can do, see if he's got an arm to play there. Because at second base, Eric Ferris is a very good defensive player, whether or not he can make that transition. Zelus Wheeler used to play it, but he's really a third baseman now. The only other guy that's on any roster that could maybe play that job is Jeff Bianchi, who we acquired as a waiver claim, from the Royals system, basically. We claimed him from the Cubs. We claimed him earlier in the same offseason from the Royals, but he's a guy who had some injury problems and would not be ready to contribute at all, hitting-wise, to a Major League roster. Not that his tourists can really hit either. Kerry was telling me, what was the stat you pulled up? He's a switch hitter, but against righties?
He hit something like, he hit 171 against right-handed hitters.
God,
as a switch hitter.
That's so bad. That's so, so bad. Somebody's going to have to back up the position. That's why when we get to our 25-man roster projections here in a second, you will hear Cesar Estures firmly implanted in mine. There's a bunch of names that got invited. There's, like Kerry said, there's 4 catchers coming, plus the 3 that are on the 40-man roster, and most of that is just because you need guys to catch all the extra pitchers that are in camp. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of the game. So don't worry too much about those extra names. Patrick Arliss is old. Well, not super old, but he's older. What was the other old guy's name that we got?
Well, Mike Rivera's an old guy.
It's Paul something, isn't it? Yeah, Mike Rivera's old. It's Paul something, isn't it?
Paul Phillips.
Yeah, Paul Phillips is nice and old. It's actually, he's my older brother's age, which to me is still pretty old. But it's very old for baseball, especially at the catcher position. Anderson De La Rosa, another guy that it's just a system guy. I mean, he's a good minor league catcher. Somebody has to catch the ball that pitchers throw in the minor leagues. But he's not really in any danger of taking anybody's job up here.
He'll be a bullpen catcher down the road sometime.
Yep. And then, of course, Jeff Bradley and Taylor Youngman are starters, but Juan Perez is a relief pitcher who we picked up on a minor league contract. He'll be up there at spring training. He's a lefty, that's why I bring him up, or mention him rather. And Daniel Meadows is another guy who's a lefty pitcher in the minor league system who you can follow on Twitter, by the way, at DanMeadows35. But he's seems to be a good dude. He's 6'6", big frame, big body, and plenty of life on his pitches. So he got the invite to spring training this year, so congratulations to him. Edwin Masonette can play shortstop. He played shortstop for Nashville most of the time last year. He's on the non-roster invite list again because somebody needs to fill in the shortstop. But again, I don't see him breaking camp with the team either. I mean, he's 31 years old now, well, he's 30 years old now, so not exactly a highly touted prospect at this stage in the game. What are you going
to
do?
Yeah, he's a body to throw out there.
He is. And again, decent defensively, could come up if somebody gets hurt for a long term and you need another infield backup, but not going to contribute with the bats and not the best option for sure. But yeah, that's the 40-man basic breakdown and with the non-roster invitees that are coming to camp. The other names on the 40-man roster, I mean, you guys should probably know most of them as a Brewer fan. They include, let's see, should we mention now that we won't mention later? Some relief pitchers, Cody Scarpetta. If you've been following along on the blog, which is, of course, thebrewernation.com, you've seen the Brewers by the Jersey Number series that I've been writing. I've profiled Cody Scarpetta already on that. Some of the starting prospects that we have, Willie Peralta, Amari Rivas, Mike McClendon is a relief guy who I've already profiled. Already profiled Peralta as well. Actually, the Amari Rivas article is tomorrow's article. Tim Dillard's goes up today, later this afternoon. But like Michael Fears. Yeah, I mean, these guys are Frankie De La Cruz. Some of these guys are names that have pitched with the Brewers over the last couple of seasons. That are going to be there because they're on the 40-man. It's just a matter of whether or not they have any chance to make the 25-man. Here's a hint. Most of them don't. But yeah, let's. I guess this is as good a time as any. Let's get into our 25-man roster projections.
All right.
Standard, if you can even call it that, standard roster breakdown in the National League because of the pinch hitting and all of that stuff is 13 hitters and 12 pitchers. I think Carrie and I both have that split in our 25-mans. I'll let you run through the pitching first, and then we'll go back and forth a little bit and see where we're at.
All right. My starting five should come as no surprise to anybody. It's Greinke, Wolf, Gallardo, Markham, Narveson, K-Rod Axford out of the bullpen, Veras, Parra, and Braddock as your lefties, Lowe, and as my last man, I was kind of flipping around, I went with De La Cruz.
Did you? Okay. So the fact that Marco Estrada did so well as the swingman last year and is out of options, you don't care at all about that. I see how it is. Okay, that's fine. the rotation, the starting five pitchers, or the five starting pitchers, easily. And I actually put them in the order I think they'll pitch. I don't know if you did that. I don't think so, with Gallardo being third. But I wrote down Gallardo on opening day, and then Greinke, Markham, Wolf, and Narveson. Basically the same rotation that we saw last year, once everybody was healthy. Gallardo has done nothing wrong at all to take the opening day start away from him. I think he's smart enough and good enough and all that, you know, adulation type stuff. No reason not to give him the ball once again. Greinke, of course, one of the best number twos in baseball. Easily the best number two in the NL Central. So, and then the other guys. The bullpen, I've got Axford, of course, K-Rod, of course, Jose Veras, who they just traded for. They sent Casey McGee to Pittsburgh for that. I think we talked about that on our last podcast. So I've got him in the bullpen. By the way, he is out of options, but he should have no trouble making the team. But just for the record, he's out of options. Cameron Lowe, who is freshly out of options this year, I think he will make the team without any problem. Manny Parra, another guy out of options, was hurt the entire last season. Threw, what, two pitches in spring training before he hurt his arm? And then he hurt his back, and then, you know, so he's... Well, actually, we have an interview that I'll be conducting here at the end of the at the end of our segment, and that's one of the things that I'm going to bring up to our interview subject, is some of these guys coming back from injury, so that will include Manny Parra. But Marco Estrada, I have making the bullpen as the long man, because, again, he's another guy that's out of options. This is the way things work when you get some borderline talented guys. You need to put them somewhere. So I've got Marco Estrada filling that role. Now, then that leaves me one spot in the bullpen. I wrote down four guys that legitimately will compete for it, and two of them are really there only because they're out of options. That's Frankie De La Cruz and Tim Dillard, both out of options, guys that you would risk losing to waivers if you try to send them back to the minor leagues to start the year. Then the other guys are Zach Braddock, that Kerry mentioned, and Brandon Kinsler, another guy who pitched very well last year before he got hurt with a stress fracture just below his elbow. Another guy that I'm going to bring up to our interview subject. So Braddock and Kinsler, they are easily, in my opinion, the two more talented pitchers, but because of the fact that depth is important, they may start the season at AAA just so that you can keep either Dillard or Frankie De La Cruz. I don't have room for both of them, so unless somebody goes down with an injury in spring, and knock on wood, we don't want that to happen, but in my opinion, either one of those guys is going to be exposed. Dillard probably has the best chance to get down to the minors because he's cleared waivers before. But we'll have to see what happens. Catchers, I'll start there. Unfortunately, I have... Well, let me say this a different way. Jonathan Lucor is going to be the starting catcher. And then, unfortunately, I think George Gutierrez will be the backup catcher. And I don't hate George Gutierrez at all. I think he's a fine ball player. He's a decent receiver. Hits a little bit, lefty, so good for him. But I would much prefer if Martin Maldonado, the other catcher on the 40-man roster, made camp, or broke camp, rather, on the 25-man. I think he's a much better defensive player. He's okay offensively. Look at his off-season league numbers and his minor league numbers from last year. He can hit a little bit. But, again, depth is important. I think they're going to have Gutierrez make the team. What do you think?
I agree. It's going to be Lucroy and Gutierrez.
Yeah. Because, again, I don't think Wolf cares who his personal catcher is. He just doesn't want to be Lucroy. So, Randy Wolf and not John Lucroy. So, if that's from Maldonado or Gutierrez, I don't think Wolf cares. But, yeah, I think Gutierrez makes it. Yeah. And then, of course, we've got the infield and the outfield to go through. I'll start on the infield, and then you can start the outfield. The infield, around the horn, again, and this is, of course, assuming everybody's healthy and things happen the way that we expect. But Matt Gamble, finally out of options, is the first baseman starting on opening day, in my opinion. He's going to be on the team either way, and the only way he doesn't start the year at first base is if somebody just absolutely goes crazy in spring training, like Taylor Green. But even then, Gamble would have to basically hit nothing in spring training to lose this job. So I really think it's Gamble's job to lose. Ricky Weeks, of course, at second base, hopefully his ankle is fully healed by now, because it wasn't about a month ago. Said it was about 80%. Alex Gonzalez and Aramis Ramirez, short and third. The new guys will definitely be on the team. And then I have, like I said before, Cesar Asturias, for the reasons that I said before. And then the corner backup infielder, because Asturias can technically back up second, third, and short if he needs to. But the guy that I have as the corner infield backup, if you will, it's going to come down to either Taylor Green or Travis Ishikawa. Now, in my opinion, Green can back up third and second. He's done that in the minors. I think he can back up first just fine if he needs to. Doug Melvin did say that he would get a little bit of reps there in the spring, too. But Ishikawa, more of a veteran-type player, doesn't offer as much with the bat as Green does, but is suited to a bench role. Is a tremendous defender at first base. So he might be the type of guy you keep if Gamble's the starter and Green doesn't distinguish himself. Then Ishikawa's a guy that you might keep so that, you know, late in games, you have a defensive replacement for Gamble, that type of thing. So that's why it really does come down to Green or Ishikawa. I would like to think, if I'm making an actual projection, that Green does enough to get the job done.
Okay. Okay.
So those are my six infielders.
I pretty much had the exact same thing, except I had Ishikawa and his tourist making the roster, but it's more because of the concerns with Weeks' ankle than having, Green up. I almost kind of think the Brewers would rather have Green getting regular playing time down in Nashville to start the season off while they see what they have in Gamble.
That's absolutely something they could do.
Because, I mean, unless Gamble outright, like, is committing an error to be able to play at first base and can't make contact with the baseball at all, he's our starting first baseman.
Right.
That's really the only thing I had different in the infield.
Okay. Yeah, that is another reason they could keep Green, though, is because he can actually play second base and he can't. So, yeah, we'll have to watch. You may not think the sixth infielder matters as much, but, you know, pinch hitting, double switches, things like that, in the National League, it really does matter as to who fills that role. So, definitely something to keep our eyes on and your eyes as well, listeners. And in the outfield, Kerry, why don't you tell me who you've got there, and then I'll counter it. Actually, I probably won't counter it at all. I think we're the same, but go ahead.
All right. Braun, Aoki, Morgan, Hart, and Gomez. We also have Logan Schaefer taking Braun's place in the roster if Braun is actually suspended.
And I'm the exact same way. I do think that to start the year, they just go with the Hart platoon. This is, assuming Braun is there on opening day, I think they open the season with Morgan and Gomez in that center field platoon. I think ideally what they'd like to see, if Aoki, if he can handle left-handed pitching and can play defense well enough, I think they would love to have him be the starting center fielder. Yes, at the expense of Tony Plush and the fan base that, you know, we've grown to love him over the last season. I think from a purely baseball perspective, if Aoki can handle both arms coming at him, then he's a better base stealer. He's a better defender than Morgan is, based on reports. Obviously, he's not better than Gomez. He's nowhere close to Gomez. Well, okay. I'm doing a little bit of hyperbole. He might be close to Gomez. I don't know. I've never seen Aoki play. But Gomez is a tremendous defender. But you've got kind of the hybrid that you would love to have of Morgan and Gomez in Aoki if he can actually handle the pitching. So I do think that they would like to get him as the starting center fielder down the road, but again, he needs to prove himself in order to do that. But yeah, I've got the exact same lineup, though. Braun, Morgan, Hart, Gomez, Aoki, and then Logan Schaefer if they do need that sixth outfielder. The only other name that I could see getting into that conversation is Caleb Gindel, so that's just a name to remember. I know my boys over at the View from Bernie Chalet podcast. I was a guest on their podcast about a week ago, a week and a half ago, and they've got a couple of huge Caleb Gindel fans in their ranks. But I do think, I told them, and I say to you guys now, that I think it's going to be Schaefer. He's got the big league experience. His service clock is already ticking, and Gindel's isn't. So why not? And, you know, Schaefer is a better defender than Gindel. Gindel can't really handle center field. Schaefer can handle all three spots. All those things work to his advantage. They're both lefties, so there's no benefit to having an extra right-handed hitter on the bench. Mm-hmm. So I really think it's going to be Schaefer over Gindel.
Yep.
But, yeah, so that's basically the 25-man roster that we got right now. Again, nobody has officially started to throw anything or work out. I mean, yes, some guys have reported early and things have been going on over the last week or so. But until they actually get into drills and start doing the thing and start playing games, when Kerry and I come back at you on the podcast closer to the start of the regular season, we'll obviously have a much better idea of what that's going to be. But, of course, as things change throughout the spring, pay attention to the blog and the Twitter and the Facebook pages for all that information as well. If somebody, you know, really steps up or somebody gets hurt, that kind of stuff, all that news and notes will be out there throughout the spring as well. Other than that, are there any other, the other transactions, I guess? You want to talk about any of these guys?
Yeah, we can breeze through them real quick. Let's see here. Well, we already talked about Seth McClung.
Ah,
has been signed to a minor league deal.
Big Red. Love that guy. Not a great pitcher anymore.
Anymore?
Yeah, anymore. He had a couple of good years. Okay, maybe he was never great.
Again. I suppose.
But he was effective. He, you know, helped the team out. Didn't lose every game that he was put into.
That's true.
Come on.
That is true.
But yeah, he is. Big number 73 is back on a minor league deal. He was in the minor league system of the Rangers last year. I don't think he ever made it to the big league roster for the Rangers last year, did he?
Mm-hmm.
And he was played with the Rays, you know, previously to the Brewers as well. But yeah, he's back in the minor league system, and hopefully, because I like the best for everybody, hopefully he pitches well enough at Nashville that if somebody goes down, he's one of the guys that can get called up right away. You obviously, for the good guys especially, you want their careers to be good. So that's my little blurb on Seth McClung. You can follow him on Twitter at Big Red B-Ball. So go out there and tell him the Brewer Nation told you about it.
Brewers also signed Vinny Chulk.
Yeah.
He looks like he's bounced around quite a bit. Didn't see any big league action the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And...
Do you even have to?
And,
Ugh.
Brewers signed left fielder Corey Patterson to a minor league deal about a couple weeks ago. As you guys have already probably have noticed by our rosters, we don't give him a chance in hell making it. Unless, like, the entire outfield gets wiped out by injuries, then maybe he might have a chance in hell.
You know, I'd rather put Gomez out there with a broken collarbone than play Corey Patterson.
Yeah.
I'd rather put Corey Hart out there with a broken leg than play Corey Patterson. Corey Patterson is a bad baseball player. Everywhere he's been, he's never been good. He's shown flashes only occasionally. I think on Twitter, and I'm normally one of the most positive guys on the Twitter account especially, because thank you to all of you out there, but I've got 5,500 followers plus now on that Twitter account, which is so cool, I can't even begin to describe it to you guys, so I really appreciate that. But when the work came down to this tourist sign, I slammed him like 3 or 4 times, I think, in a row, about how it just makes me sick. I hate to hear that. What in the hell is going on? Like, I trust Doug Melvin to know what he's doing. And yes, I know that Corey Patterson was only signed to be a minor league fill-in, but, you know, honestly, Corey Patterson may have only been signed to fill in left field in case an extra outfielder that was slated for AAA has to be in Milwaukee because of the Braun situation. That might be the only reason he's in our organization. In fact, I hope it is, and I hope Braun wins his appeal, and I hope he starts on opening day, and I hope Corey Patterson gets his ass cut. That's how much I dislike Corey Patterson. Former Cub, former Oriole, somehow. Former Brewer, yeah, remember that failed stint that he had actually with Milwaukee a couple of seasons ago? Hip, hip, hooray. I hate Corey Patterson. Can you tell?
Yeah, I don't understand why they would bring him back after he...
Maybe he can still run and defend a little bit? Is that why he's got value? I don't know. But he's limited to left field. Can't throw the ball hardly at all anymore.
I don't get that. He'd have been better off just taking somebody in a Rule 5 draft. And
Yeah, minor league portion of the Rule 5 drafts, just ask him a AAA.
And, yeah.
Didn't we take a Rule 5 draftee in the AAA portion this year?
We did, I think.
I mean, it happened. We did, we probably talked about it last 5 years.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I don't remember. His name.
Excuse me. Well, yeah, without further ado, though, finally about to make this phone call, and thanks to the wonders of Skype, that brings you this interview. And I think the way Skype records, and we won't know this until we look at it later, but just in case we can't fix it, you may hear me out of one ear and this interview subject out of the other. I know Carrie's going to try to fix that in editing if it actually does happen that way, but I think the way that records, that's the one negative to it. But yes, without further ado, on the line and about to be brought on to the podcast here, from SportsIllustrated.com, and I will introduce him again real quick, but we've got the injury expert, Will Carroll. So here we go with the interview.
All right, joining me now on the program, and as my partner Carrie takes a back seat because only one of these microphones works, I am joined by SportsIllustrated.com, SI.com, Will Carroll, the injury expert. Will, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy evening to take my call.
Hey, not a problem. I enjoy it. I got a chance to meet you last year during the playoffs. Always happy to talk some Brewers. You know what's funny, though? with podcasts, and I, of course, do some podcasting myself over at SI, and got a new secret one that's getting ready to launch here in the next couple weeks.
We
always talk about it. You know, we can do radio now without the whole benefit of a radio studio, but it's things like, you know, only having one mic and the occasional, drop connection that remind us, we're not really radio guys.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I'm officially in a radio studio. I've got a fancy mic and a fancy board and the whole thing. I do a weekly radio show now for the Milwaukee Sports Geeks.
Exactly. You're big time. I just have a mic and a garage band. I'm sort of indie. I'm still punk rock.
Absolutely. No, and you know what? Without the geek here, his name's Chris, if you haven't had a chance to meet him, but without his studio and setup, I wouldn't be doing this myself, so... I definitely appreciate his equipment. There's no doubt about that. But Brewers baseball's coming up. We're recording here on Thursday evening. Brewers and pitchers and catchers report for the Brewers rather in 2 days. First workout on Monday, and a number of key bullpen pieces. I mean, the Brewers won 96 games last year, and it was great, and they made the NLCS. And I'm not knocking any of the effort, but you lose LaTroy Hawkins and Takashi Saito to free agency. So a couple of these key bullpen arms that were hurt, that lost the balance of their season once they got hurt, they're coming back for the Brewers, probably destined for the 25-man roster, or at least starting the year in AAA for a couple of them. So I kind of want to get your thoughts on where, if you know where these guys are in their rehabs. Obviously, everybody says that they're going to be ready for opening day. What kind of recurring problems we might have out of some of these guys, or if they're 100% and good to go.
Really, it kind of depends on which ones you're looking at, because there are so many different places that these guys are, and we're really not going to know until we see them out there. What's striking for me for the Brewers is, despite the fact this has been an offseason of some tumult, of some turnover, it's been pretty stable. I mean, it's essentially the same coaching staff. I know Dale Swaim went to the dark side, but, other than that, other than that big guy at first base being gone, and the two you mentioned with Hawkins, I'm not sure they wouldn't have been gone in any circumstances. You know, they're good, they were solid, but it's that next step. Some of these guys, whichever ones it is, have to step up at the front of the bullpen the same way that John Axford stepped up a couple of years ago, the same way that Chris Narveson has stepped up and solidified his spot in the rotation. I think now is a time where it's not the key players, it's those important but really secondary guys that we're starting to see fill in. And that tells you the plan came together. I know everybody thinks the plan was completely focused on 2011, and it darn near worked, but there's so much more coming. There's some really good players in the system, and there's some really good players at the upper levels of the system. Not going to be stars. Nobody's going to be a mineral leaf superstar, but those guys are the ones that can really make or break a season.
I completely agree with you. And like you said, a couple of the guys that left in free agency, probably going to move on anyway. The Brewers got their shock when K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez, decided to accept arbitration and come back. But that solidifies your eighth inning role. I mean, you've got a pair of closers at the back end of the bullpen. I have all the faith in the world in John Axford. Some people like to still compare him to Derek Turnbow. Not the same situation, of course. Different types of pitchers. Obviously, Axford has much
different
kinds
of people.
Very true. Very true also. So I think that he's going to just be just fine in his second full year as Brewers closer. So I got no problem there. But like you said, those middling guys that are coming back for the Brewers, and specifically I wanted to get your thoughts on Manny Parra and Zach Braddock, the pair of lefties that they have, and Brandon Kinsler. Now, Parra and Kinsler were body issues, so to speak, as far as structural damages. Manny first hurt his arm. They were worried about Tommy John surgery. Obviously, didn't have to do that. And then he hurt his back while he was rehabbing a little bit and missed the entire season. I mean, he didn't throw. He threw two pitches, I think, in spring and got hurt.
Just such a lost season for Manny, and he's gone through so much just to get to this stage. The fact that he's this close and even has a possibility is a miracle of modern science. Manny has had so many problems. He's had arm problems. He's had back problems. He's had leg problems. He's had elbow problems. He's had shoulder problems. He's one, and I don't mean this in a negative way, he's just one big problem. And the fact that he can keep going on and have the talent to be considered one of the options in the bullpen, that's pretty amazing. I don't know if he'll ever hold up for a full season, But when he's on, he's pretty darn good.
Yeah, exactly. And like one of his other problems in Brewer fandom is Manny Parra's head problems. And, you know, I don't mean concussions. I mean the fact that he doesn't seem to be able to focus in or do something, you know, to keep that mound presence going. But
he's just never had a chance to develop that, really.
Also true. Because,
yeah, I mean, he's just been so injured that this is really a guy who, despite the fact that he's got great stuff and that he's you know, taken steps up the levels and even had some major league success, he just doesn't have very much experience. And I think people have to remember that. You know, there's a big difference between service time and mound time.
Right.
And Manny Parra is still very much a young, inexperienced player.
Yeah, his attitude was perfect when he and Yovani were supposed to lead the team in the rotation, and of course Parra had injuries that year and nothing really worked out for him, and of course Gallardo was kind of taken off into the ace that we know him as today. Manny Parra said at the Brewers Fan Fest in the winter, now's the time for me and Yo to step up and be the leaders on this team and lead this rotation. So I know he's got the right mindset and the right attitude, but yeah, he just needs to be able to stay healthy enough to, you know, to realize that potential, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same for Braddock. Here's a guy who, coming out of college, was really well thought of. People were comparing him immediately to Chris Capuano, and that was a good comp at the time.
Right.
And again, a guy who just can't seem to stay healthy at the right times. Injuries aren't just an issue of how much time you've lost, but how many opportunities you've lost. And Braddock has been on the edge. He's, as a lefty, who really can be dominating on lefties, I'm not sure he's ever going to be a starter. He never really developed that third pitch, but I think he's still got a world of potential if he can just keep his arm held together.
Right, and of course, Braddock lost plenty of opportunities last year to a sleeping disorder that he was dealing with. Supposedly, that's all taken care of, and he's had the entire offseason to really get himself straight. So I'm really hoping he reports to camp, throws great. You know, like you said, he's never going to be a starter. I think the team's got him penciled into the bullpen right now, but Braddock is a guy that has shown the ability to get both lefties and righties out on a fairly consistent basis when he is pitching well.
Yeah, so yeah, and I think, you know, if everything's right with him, and there's so many issues both behind the scenes and on the mound that have to go right, but he's the kind of guy that you can see things. You can kind of squint a little bit and see where things can go right for him, and that's a role that there's just nobody else on that roster right now that could fill. And so by getting him in there, by making him not so much, you're exactly right, he can get right-handers out. I don't want to make him out to be that a loogie at this stage, but man, he's like a super loogie. He's a loogie you can leave in.
Yep. And we've got a lot of space that's going to need to be filled in that sixth and seventh inning. Cameron Lowe, of course, coming back nice and healthy, and he was a lightning rod here in Milwaukee. But he had plenty of good outings. You know, he's the type of guy you can try to lean on in a little bit lower leverage situations. That's why having K-Rod is so important. But last bullpen arm I wanted to talk about was Brandon Kinstler. Now, he had a stress fracture in his elbow, or maybe it was in his forearm. But he lost so much time, and he was really that type of guy that, you know, he came up nice and early in the season. He got sent down when Marco Estrada needed to come up, and then he came back for a little bit and, once Takashi Saito got hurt. So he's the type of guy who throws hard, and the team seems to really like him. But I guess really what I'm looking for is what kind of lingering effects could that be? I mean, a stress fracture, and I'm no expert, but, you know, as you throw hard, if there's a lot of strain and wear on those bones and whatever else, that's where that comes from. So if he's still throwing hard, could this happen again? I mean, how likely is a stress fracture to recur?
Well, not very in that location, because Bill Rausch put in both a screw and a plate, if I remember correctly. I'd have to go back and look at my notes. But, you know, it was just below the elbow. This isn't like, who was the Cal? There was a Cardinals pitcher, Cal Eldred, who was also with Brewers,
yep.
Who had a screw in his elbow. And that was one of the things. You're like, screw in his elbow? Really? That's not good. And then one time, this was terrible, it came a little loose. And they basically just had to reach in there and tighten it up. I was like, well, the last thing you want a doctor telling you is you literally got a screw loose. This isn't an elbow problem. One of the things we always deal with is, you know, anatomical issues. This really is his forearm, and it really is a broken arm, and they had to at least fixate it. So that shouldn't happen again. But with Kinstler, you have to worry about what caused it. I mean, this isn't like, you know, Zach going out and playing basketball and breaking a rib. This isn't like somebody or Carlos diving and breaking a collarbone.
Right.
This is something he was doing that nobody's really sure of caused so much stress to his arm that it broke.
Yep.
And what you have to do is look back, and you have to know about Brandon. He's not a tall guy. He throws really hard, and he is the classic high-effort pitcher. And you start thinking high effort and an arm that has a stress fracture, you really have to at least try to put two and two together and come up with four. So you do worry about what's going to happen. You see, using Manny Parra as an example, sometimes there's just so much force going through the body, and the pitching motion doesn't come together, and something breaks down. There's always going to be a weak link in the kinetic chain. So if this is now not the weak link, what's next? And that's what Dan Wright and Dave Yeager are going to have to really, really work on, and they're going to have to watch him really closely this spring. So he's not only going to have to impress the pitching coach and the manager, he's going to have to impress the training staff as well.
Exactly, and that's one of the things that I worry about him specifically is because, you know, you see pitchers all the time that their elbow gets hurt, and then once their elbow is healthy, their shoulder gets hurt. You know, it's that whole chain of command type of thing. I mean, as everybody that knows pitching mechanics a little bit understands, the force that travels through the body, starting with the legs, up through the core, through the shoulder, to the elbow, to the ball, I mean, that, you know, that whole chain needs to be in sync, otherwise stuff gets hurt.
Oh, so, my God. It's so good, Adam.
Thank you.
That is so good. I am so proud. I've been talking about the kinetic chain so long, and to see other people actually state it better than I ever did, awesome.
Oh, well, thank you so much. No, I've got designs on turning my boy into a little bit of a ball player. I don't know if that's going to be as a pitcher or not, but one of the things...
Left-handed.
You know, I haven't tied his arm behind his back yet.
Duct tape. Don't be cruel. Don't be cruel. Duct tape.
Yeah, you know, a little bit of circle around the clothes. No big deal.
Yeah.
But I guess talking about the pitchers and moving past those guys, there's a couple of injury concerns with a couple of the hitters on this team. And I just before we started to actually record this call, I brought up one name, but I'm going to hold on to him for a half a second and move on to one of the biggest pieces of the Brewers puzzle this year is going to be the play of Matt Gamel at first base.
Mm-hmm.
He, as you had said, you lose opportunities when you get hurt. He has come into camp a couple of years in a row out of shape, nagging injuries, something he hurt in the offseason that he didn't tell the trainer about. He says that he's lost some weight and rededicated himself in his, you know, in the quote-unquote best shape of his life.
Oh, always.
Coming into 2012. But what kind of nagging things, I mean, how is it, let me put the question this way. What's the best way to try to avoid some of that nagging stuff? I mean, is it just pure conditioning? What in your experience and your time out there in the world, what helps players be in the best shape of their life?
You know, I wish there was one single answer. But the Brewers, like every team, has strength and conditioning people. They have, and the Brewers go above and beyond a lot of that, they have strength and conditioning guys at every level, which, believe it or not every team does. Actually, there was one team I was talking to this offseason who just now got interns, college interns, to be strength coaches at the lower levels. And I was like, really? With as much money as you guys spend, you couldn't at least toss this guy's, you know, a couple grand? No, we're trying to cut back.
Oh, man.
Gotta be kidding me. But the Brewers do it right. They've got nutritionists. They've got everything. The thing that I see more and more, and you hear about more and more, and there's nothing against this, guys going off on their own and having their own program, and they're working with their own guys. Maybe it's their agent has a guy. You know, a lot of the Red Sox originally were the ones that started going to Athletes Performance, either in Florida or out in Arizona. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. They do great work. It's those guys that are working out with some guy and, you know, or back at their college or high school. Or you just see crazy things, and not being on the same page as the team, I don't want to sound all paternalistic, but it's just not a really good idea. I don't know why, if the team is going to provide all this for you, why you wouldn't want to be on the same page when they would really like to see you succeed and, by your success, pay you millions of dollars. You know, I don't know whether Gamble's been a participant in those in the past, but certainly his results have been mixed. I would hope with the opportunity he has this year, and as bad as the Brewers need him, I hope he comes in ready to go, and I hope he hits like he can.
Exactly. I mean, you may remember the famous story about how he reported like at the last possible second for a hitter.
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
they moved his locker outside.
Yeah.
Which is a nice touch.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that's great about the Brewers is they don't hide how they think about you. You're never going to wonder what Doug Melvin is thinking. And when, you know, whether it's anybody in that organization, one of the things that I love about that organization is just how straightforward they are with everybody.
Right, and I think most fans don't even realize that, because when Don Money was quoted in the press after he came up with this, you know, after the minor league season was done, was that extra coach in the in the dugout, he kind of said some words about why Matt Gamble didn't come up as a September call-up, and he was very straightforward, to the point, and direct about that. So a lot of people thought, wow, I can't believe that a coach would say this about one of the players. Well, sometimes that's what guys need to hear.
Yeah, and Gamble's always been. The talent has never been a question. It's been the effort. I think, you know, finally moving him off third base where he was absolutely brutal will help him. Certainly we've seen players in the past who were pretty bad at third base, move to other positions, and have some success. So it's a pattern I hope to see repeat itself.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Okay, I know I said I'd keep you for about 10 minutes, and it's been about 15, so I appreciate the extra time. But let's get into the final guy I wanted to talk about, and the name is Ryan Braun, but no, I'm not going to ask you about the, you know, all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to talk to you about him as the example, and last season it almost seemed to be the injury du jour, where everybody seemed to have strained rib cages, strained intercostal muscles. Braun has had that flare up two seasons in a row now. I would figure that with some of that probably comes from lack of flexibility, but I don't know that for sure, so I guess the main question I have is, what exactly does an intercostal strain mean? I mean, I know it's muscles between the ribs, but what does it mean, and what are some ways that, you know, guys can strengthen that area or kind of prevent that problem from happening?
You know, one of the things that people have been trying to figure out is, where do these injuries come from? Did we have these 50 years ago? Peter Gammons actually once emailed me. He goes, when did the human body grow an oblique? And I don't think he meant it like it sound, but it was actually a very astute question. And last year, I went back through the archives of Sporting News, New York Times, and I was actually able to find descriptions that matched. Mickey Mantle once injured himself on a hard swing and felt a stitch in his side. And he was out for 3 days. He complained of exactly the kind of things you'd complain for with an oblique. And so it's always been there.
Sure.
It's not like we just grew these. But I think the improved bodies that we're seeing from these guys, you know, Mickey Mantle would go drinking after games, and it's not like guys don't go drinking, but they're also very conscious of their physical condition and what they're putting in their bodies. With Ryan, I think we're seeing an extreme. The guy's in amazing physical condition. He puts a ton of force on his body, both in the field and especially at bat. What we don't know, because this whole core performance thing is relatively new, and you know, you see ball players today, and they have these rippling abs and look like they should be on Jersey Shore. There is a balance between not only strength and flexibility, but one muscle group and another muscle group. You know, obliques are being strained because they're out of balance with the abdominals. And guys would worry about their six-pack and forget about their oblique. It's just like a lot of guys with hamstring issues have a differential in strength between their hamstring and their quad. Once you get that back in balance, the problems tend to go away. With this, we still don't know how to balance this whole thing. We're still learning. So I don't have an answer yet. It's one of those things that I know the physical therapists, the physiotherapists, the athletic trainers, the doctors are really taking a look at, and we just don't have a good answer. We've been very reactive. But I was down at Jim Andrews' injuries in baseball course at ASMI down in Birmingham in January, and they're getting closer. Being able to do electromyograms on guys through a swing is giving us an idea of what kind of forces and what kind of muscles and what sort of balances we need. So I think this has become such a problem that it's forced the doctors behind the scenes to take a look at this. So I can't answer why and I can't answer what, but I can tell you the how is going to be that the research will come to bear here in the next couple of years.
Well, that is good news, I guess, for down the road. And hopefully it's not something that rears its ugly head for Milwaukee coming up this next season. We need our guys healthy and on the field, especially, you know, with some of that offensive production out of Prince Fielder. The Brewers definitely need as many games out of their bats as possible.
Absolutely.
Well, Will, I thank you so incredibly much. You think I'm a big shot with my radio studio? No, I'm just I'm less of a anybody than you are. So
hardly.
I appreciate you taking the time to join my little program here and educate some of the Brewer fans with some of your vast knowledge.
Anytime, and hopefully there'll be a couple times I'll be up in Milwaukee this year. We can catch a game and maybe get some of the listeners there.
That would be fantastic. And I'll tell you what, you had mentioned my little hat and logo that you said you'd buy one if I ever produced them.
Yes.
Well, my mom actually got me one for Christmas. She copyrighted my logo and everything. So when you get to town, let me know when I've got one for you.
Awesome. See, that makes it all worth it.
I appreciate the time, Will.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
And that, again, was Will Carroll joining us. Absolutely tremendous that he was able to take the time out to talk to, well, me. I did all the talking. But Kerry was, of course, listening to the whole interview. So real cool that he was able to help us out. I mean, as you heard him say, I had a chance to meet Will at the NLDS last year. Or was it the NLCS? Either way, came into town for the playoffs at Miller Park, covering it for Sports Illustrated. And I had a chance to meet him and get to know him briefly. And he was a great guy. And I talked to him then about coming on to the podcast down the road, and he agreed, and we finally got that done. So once again, Will, thank you so much. Obviously, you're not on the line anymore, but really, really appreciate that. That pretty much does it, I think, for today. Anything else we want to talk about?
We probably should just bring up real quick that, especially since this is the first day of spring training, that our current lease with Maryville ends at the end of spring training.
Forgot all about that.
So you'll probably start seeing some news on that. The Brewers do have, what you said, about two or three two-year options they can exercise.
I think it's three consecutive two-year-long options, yeah.
But the team is kind of looking for, I read that they were looking for an expansion of the training facilities.
Yeah.
The weight room is such that most of the players have to actually go outside to get ready to lift weights because it's so small in there.
Yeah, they have to go in shifts, which is really dumb.
Yeah, and the office, and they want some of the offices expanded as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever been to spring training in Maryville, the stadium itself is really nice. I mean, it seats 7,000 fans in actual seats, and then if you ever watched the Brewer spring training on TV, you get the grass berm out in the center field, or should say out in the entire outfield over the wall, and that sits another 4,000. I mean, it's 11,000 capacity. It's pretty darn good. The stadium itself is beautiful. They've got five practice fields, an entire dedicated area to the minor leagues team across the parking lot. So that all is very nice. The fact that it's in Adam McKelvey who wrote its location in a hard scrabble part of Phoenix. Who uses the word hard scrabble? Adam McKelvey did. But, Maryville is not in the best neighborhood in Phoenix. But the fact of the matter is that it's fine enough. I mean, it's not like you park your car there and it gets broken into or anything. So, I mean, it's fine for that. But yeah, exactly like Kerry said, some of the extra facility type stuff, it's terrible. A major league team should not have to put up with it. And that's where the negotiating comes in. I did read it, and Adam McKelvey, like I said, posted an article about this at Brewers.com. But the Arizona Sports and Tourism Authority has $46 million earmarked in its budget over the next 10 years for renovations at five existing stadiums in Arizona. Maryville being, quote, first in line, unquote, for $6.7 million of that money. So if the city of Phoenix commits to the team to make these renovations, and then the team then can commit to at least the first exercising that first option of 2 years, or what I'm sure Phoenix would prefer even more is just making a new long-term deal, getting rid of all these options, and if, you know, they're going to do these renovations, and the team commits to staying for, I don't know, 10 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see how it plays out, but absolutely, Kerry, it's a very good thing to bring up, especially as everybody's getting going there right now. But yeah, the Cactus League is the name of the league that you'll be hearing about over the next couple of weeks. That's where the Brewers play. Now, the only other thing then that Kerry jogged my memory about that we should mention, and I don't know if you had the notes written down on it because I didn't write them down. Spring training games are broadcast. Not all of them, but for the Brewers in particular, there are six that are going to be on TV, three of which are produced by Fox Sports Wisconsin people, and that means Brian Anderson and Bill Schroeder will be in the booth and on the call. Three other ones that are produced by other local Fox Sports affiliates, so they will be broadcast at the same time here in Milwaukee, but they will be boothed by the teams from those areas. I want to say one's against the Angels, one's against the Diamondbacks, and the Athletics. I forget exactly who the other teams are that are going to broadcast those games. But the first most important date to know for your viewing pleasure, Tuesday, March 6th, the Brewers take on the Athletics in their
yep.
traditional spring training opener. They face the Athletics every year for a number of years in the opener because they both have facilities in Phoenix. But they face the Athletics once again. That's going to be on Fox Sports Wisconsin, broadcast by Rock and BA. I want to say that that's one of the ones that 620 is going to broadcast as well with Uecker on the call. Can't remember that for sure. I do have that written down somewhere, but I don't have it in front of me. But, yeah, Tuesday, March 6th, I think it's a 1:05 Central Time start, but they will be rebroadcasting that one in the evening at a 7:05 or a 7 o'clock window for all of us. So it should be really good. I'm really looking forward to it. But yeah, March 6th, that's also, by the way, the date that MLB The Show comes out for the PlayStation, the new one. So March 6th, I will be on my couch.
March 6th, that game is on TMJ. The first TMJ broadcast will be March 4th.
Oh, so March 4th is even the first one for the radio.
Yep, and then for those of you who have the MLB TV package from MLB.com.
I do.
There are quite a number of games that will be broadcast live on the internet stream. The first one of those is on the March 5th game against the Giants in Scottsdale.
Very good stuff. But yeah, it's the first TV one if you're a visual learner, like so many people are. Again, that's March 6th. Okay, now they're saying it's a 2 o'clock start locally.
Yep, 2:05.
Okay, so there you go. Yeah, so it's a 1:05 start in Maryville. I do remember that now. Yeah, so it's a 2 o'clock against Oakland on March 6th. So, and they will be replaying that in prime time later that evening. So, yeah, March 6th is a big day there. But, yeah, games start before that, and it's going to be a really good time. It's here. Pitchers and catchers have reported. The mitts start popping, the little things be stopping. And it's an exciting day. Tom Hogricourt, of course, wet blanket that he is, went on Twitter today saying, so pitchers and catchers report today, which basically means nothing, because they don't actually start working out until Monday. And then about 5 minutes later, he got inundated, apparently, with a bunch of people saying, it's at least symbolic, jackass. So he tweeted again then, as many of you have pointed out, there is a symbolism associated with this day, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, thanks, buddy. We're excited. Stop raining on our parade.
Sometimes I think he's auditioning for a bigger role with the mothership.
Something like
down
that.
The road or something.
What do they call him on? He's the baseball insider for ESPN Milwaukee, the local radio affiliate here. They call him the Prince of Darkness on that radio station because he's negative and, like I said, a wet blanket, basically. That's why I tend to not... Okay, that's not the only reason why. But I do tend to listen to a different local affiliate here in Milwaukee called 1250 WSSP, and their baseball insider for last year and this year is Adam McCallaby from Brewers.com, so I prefer to listen to what he has to say. But that's just me. That's just me. But yeah, we will be coming back at you on the podcast, like I had said earlier, much towards the beginning of the regular season. Opening day, if somehow you don't know this already, April 6th, it's a Friday, the Brewers open at home against the Cardinals, who, we've mentioned this before, but I'll bring it up again just in case this is the first time that you're hearing one of our podcasts. The Cardinals opened the regular season with a one-game series in Miami at the new Marlins Stadium on Wednesday, April 4th. Why? I don't know. It's a one-game regular season series, so hopefully they will throw Chris Carpenter in that game and we won't have to deal with that jackass.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. But that probably does mean we get Garcia, Wainwright, and who's their fourth? Kyle Loesch still?
Kyle Loesch, yeah.
Ugh.
Well, and
Westbrook's their five.
And with Wainwright, you don't know what you're going to get yet.
Very true, but I'm sure he'll probably still start one of those games. So, yeah, well, I mean, hopefully we can sweep the defending champions right out of Miller Park before we go on the road to Wrigley. Oh, and that's the other thing that actually came down just in the last couple of days. The first game, April 9th, is a Monday. That's the game at Wrigley that we opened against the Cubs. I don't is that their home opener? We should look at that real quick. Anyway, but the Monday night game was originally scheduled for the standard 7:05 first pitch, but that was switched to a 6:05 start as it was picked up by ESPN for Monday Night Baseball.
Cool.
So that'll be good. Okay, yeah, Cubs home opener is actually the 5th. They open against the Nationals, so we're the second series that they play. But yeah, that starts on the 9th. The game will switch to a 6:05 start, like I said. That's actually a 4-game series, 2 evening games, 2 day games, of course, because it's Wrigley and they're idiots. So why not throw a non-getaway day game at us on the 11th? Whatever. Maybe I'll take that day off of work, too. Got to see as much baseball as we can. One last time with the coughing, and I guess that's about all we had for you guys today. So thank you for listening to our podcast. We're definitely over an hour, pushing an hour and a half here, thanks to the interview that we had with Will Carroll. And again, so many thanks to him for taking the time out. Really makes us feel special that he was willing to come onto our podcast, you know?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And you heard him say that he thinks that we're all small potatoes, and we're smaller potatoes than he is. So thanks again to Will. But, Carrie, anything else to add?
Well, we will have kind of a big announcement to make during our next podcast, so make sure to check us out in late March.
Yeah. It's actually about the podcast itself, so that'll be nice to bring to you. A little wrinkle we're going to be adding throughout the season. It'll be sounding things a little bit different probably. So, yeah, definitely come back and check that out for sure. But, yeah, it's Pitchers and Catchers Day. It's great. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon right now, so people have been doing their thing at Maryvale. In about 5 hours, I'm going to be watching Major League. So I'm happy about that. For Kerry Koska, I am Adam the Big Rig saying welcome back, Brewers Baseball. Thank you again for listening. Find us and follow us at all those things we've mentioned before, and we will catch you in a few weeks right in your opening day. Go Brewers! On a block posted, but it's no pitching, just giving our dope raps. And when you pick this way of living, there isn't a road back. So even when it rains, my day's all sunny. If it's nothing I can change, the change ain't coming. It's a whole different game. Used to play cricket, now I'm on my way to making baseball money. And that's word to Prince Fielder. You are now witnessing a build-up into something great that you will love. Yeah, can't wait for what tomorrow brings. My mind's on bigger things. Yeah. My mind's on bigger things. While you're busy complaining about your blessings, I ain't even stressing. My mind's on bigger things. Yeah. My mind's on bigger things.